Well, here with me this morning to tell us about Upstate's umbilical cord blood bank is Dr. Robert Silverman. He's the professor and chair of obstetrics and gynecology at Upstate Medical University. He's also the director of the Regional Perinatal Center, which is the high-risk obstetrical unit for Upstate New York. Welcome, Dr. Silverman. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Yes. So this is such an interesting topic for me. I've been so interested in this whole notion of cord, umbilical cord blood. But you tell us, what is it exactly and how do we come by it?
Sure. Well, umbilical cord blood is something that I think everyone takes for granted and has never really thought about the idea of its usefulness. It's blood that's left over in the placenta and umbilical cord after the birth of a baby. And traditionally what we've done is we've thrown it away.
And why is it so important, though?
Well, what we've realized since about 1980s is that it is a very rich source of cells that can be used in further therapy. And in the past, as I've said, we've just discarded it. But since we've discovered that it's such a rich source of stem cells, we've decided that this is something that we need to pursue to treat diseases.
So it can treat dozens and dozens of diseases, things like cancer, things like sickle cell, and we'll be going into that in more detail. But does this, in a way, eliminate the controversy that's always been around stem cells?
It does, because the advantage is that there is no controversy. It's in a tissue that otherwise would be thrown away, and I don't think there's anyone who has a problem about the idea of using a placenta. It comes from a live baby, and it's a resource that we've wasted.
You did mention to me before we started the interview that in some cultures, the families would like to actually, I think you said Native Americans.
Yeah. There are certain cultures that like to take the placenta home. Some women who want to take the placenta home for whatever reason, whether it's to plant a tree on it, to bury it, it's part of what they would like to do. And of course, that's not a controversy because everyone would always be able to do whatever they want with their placenta.
But the concept here is that we harvest, basically take these placentas and umbilical cords, which are rich in these stem cells, which are, they have equipotential or multipotentiality in terms of being able to develop into different types of tissue and that.
That's exactly correct, because we have two different sources of stem cells. We have the blood itself, which contains stem cells that can develop into any type of a blood type cell, whether it's red blood cell, etc. And then we have the placenta and umbilical cord that have what are called mesenchymal stem cells, which can be used to develop all different types of tissue.
Well, that's incredible. So we could grow someone an organ, so to speak.
Well, I think eventually we'll be able to do that, but not yet.
Yeah,
but that's where
in
there's
the
a lot of things that are developing in the future.
But as I said, I think that, you know, with all of the controversy in the last, I don't know, couple of decades around stem cell research, and we can only use certain lines to do that kind of thing, and the Bush administration came out with that, this literally can eliminate it.
It does.
Because we have a wealth. I mean, for every baby that's born, we've got that resource. And as you said, it was medical waste at one point.
It is. When you think about it, just in upstate New York, and our 19 hospitals are part of our region, there's over 20,000 births. And that's 20,000 a year of potential sources of stem cells to be used just in our area.
It's absolutely staggering. I mean, when you think of the resource there.
It is. And it's good that it's been recognized, and certainly Upstate taking the forefront of developing a public cord blood bank is very important.
Let's talk about that. So there literally has been a groundbreaking. There's kind of the beginning of putting up a whole building to house this blood bank.
That's correct.
Tell us where it's going to be.
The groundbreaking has been at the Community General Campus, and the idea is that it'll be a two-story, somewhere around 10,000 square foot building. Right now it's scheduled for fall of 2014. With construction, one never knows. It may be a little bit later, but it'll be based within the Community General Campus of Upstate.
And so tell us, you mentioned public blood bank. First, I think I noted in preparing for the interview that this will be one of only two in all of New York State
That's public blood banks? Yeah. Right now, there's one public bank that's on Long Island, and there actually only are 27 public banks in the United States. So
wow.
This is one of very few.
Now, when we say a public blood bank, is this just for umbilical cord blood, or does it garner blood from other sources?
No, this would only be for umbilical cord blood and placenta and umbilical cords themselves. And so, but that's the sole source. There's no other source for these particular types of banks.
And the fact that it's public, how is that different than, let's say, a private institution?
Well, the advantage is that it allows everyone within the United States, literally, to be able to find a match if they have a disorder that can be treated with stem cells. Traditionally, the public banks have been very few in number, and most of these have been private cord blood banks where you donate the blood from your baby. It's kept just for you, and it can never be used for anyone else. And the disadvantage of that, of course, is that if you have a disorder that needs stem cells, you haven't had a ready available source of stem cells for.
So basically the key point here is the difference is in access.
It is.
More people, and there's not a private, it's not a profit.
Correct. It's not
associated
for profit.
With it.
That's exactly correct. It's not a profit associated with it. And of course, it gives the availability to a wide number and variety of people.
It's really a very exciting and very incredible. And just very quickly, tell me a little bit about the kinds of things that we can do with those kinds of stem cells.
Right now, there's about 80 diseases that stem cells have been used to treat disorders. And interestingly enough, the first transfusion of stem cells was only 1988. This is really new technology. A lot of what we do has been sort of the standard therapies. Hard to believe we're saying standard, but the standard therapies have been for treatments of things like leukemias, certain types of anemias like sickle cell disease, different kinds of myeloproliferative disorders, which are rare but exist, some bone marrow cancers like multiple myeloma. So there's quite a few different types of disorders that these stem cells have been used for.
So the point is, right now, currently, that's available, those types of treatments.
That's correct, if you can find a match.
And tell
us about
that.
That's the difficult part.
So what does that mean, find
a
match?
Well, what ends up happening is that in order to be able to use a stem cell, you have to have a stem cell that's close enough to you that your body won't reject it. And with stem cells, the advantage is that you don't have to have quite as close a match as you do with adult stem cells that are developed. And with a public bank, you have access to literally thousands, if not tens of thousands, of other people that are out there. And so your chances of being able to get a match that will allow you to have tissue transplanted into you and not have a rejection of that tissue is much, much higher.
It's incredible.
It's neat.
I mean, it really is. And you were saying at one point something about how people might be able to designate their own placental blood for family members?
Or? Yeah, one of the things that's interesting, in the last probably about 10 years, we've discovered that not only are there stem cells within umbilical cord, but also within the placenta and within the supporting structures of the veins in the umbilical cord, there's something called mesenchymal stem cells, and those potentially can be used to develop almost any type of tissue within the body. So the idea of maybe 50 years from now, growing your own transplant, I think that we're beginning to see the light at the end of the tunnel.
You know, it really sounds like something from, I don't know, 1984, fast forward.
It does.
But it sounds very sci-fi, but it's just so exciting and amazing. So I'm going to ask you to hold on to that thought, because we'll be right back with more from Dr. Silverman right after this short break. Along with Dr. Robert Silverman, and we're talking about the new umbilical cord blood bank that is being constructed right here in central New York with Upstate Medical University. So before the break, we were talking about all the incredible uses for this cord blood, but let's get back to the idea of how do you actually get the cord blood? I think people might be a little nervous about that.
Yeah, sure. This isn't a traditional type of blood donation where somebody actually has to poke you with a needle. What happens is after the baby is born, we clamp the umbilical cord and then we clean it off with some sterilizing solution and put a needle into the umbilical cord. Now, the umbilical cord doesn't have any nerves, so it doesn't hurt the mother. And then we collect the umbilical blood, which takes about between 5 and 10 minutes, usually within five, and then we are done. So it's pretty straightforward. If we're going to use the placenta after the placenta delivers after the birth, we then take the placenta and store it. The whole process itself is very rapid. It doesn't cause any pain or discomfort, and it actually can be done both in cesarean sections as well as in women who deliver vaginally.
So basically we're saying that if a mom gives permission, and I want to talk about that whole process too, how moms are going to be notified that this is a possibility, basically at birth, the cord is clamped, you take the little bit of blood, and after the whole process of birth and the cord is cut, then you can basically retrieve the placenta.
That's correct.
And then what would determine whether you would use the placenta or not?
Well, actually, not even just the placenta, but also the blood. One of the things that is part of the blood bank's responsibility is to look at the quality of the blood that's collected and the placenta that's collected and make sure that there isn't any contamination from either bacteria or funguses or anything along those lines, and that it's been properly collected. So if there's any evidence of any of those problems, then they wouldn't use the blood for direct patient therapy, but it could be used for research.
Oh, I see.
And so the cord blood bank will be the final determining factor in whether or not the blood and or placenta will be available for clinical use.
So these stem cells are really precious. I mean, they're like gold, it sounds to me, from things we were just talking about in terms of their usefulness. What do you do with them once you've collected them? I mean, how do you preserve them?
How do you take care of it once they're collected? Sure. Well, what ends up happening is the stem cells exist in several different places. And in general, what a blood bank does with the blood that's collected is that they remove a lot of the things within the blood, extra plasma, and cells that aren't needed. And they basically freeze the blood. And they freeze the placentas. And these aren't just your garden variety kind of freezer that you go buy over at the hardware store. These are freezers that are able to keep the blood at hundreds of degrees below zero. It's actually minus 160 degrees.
Wow.
So these are specialized freezers. And what's interesting to me is that the first stem cells were used in therapy in 1988, and we still have stem cells that have been collected in the 80s that appear to still be viable. So we don't know what the long-term effect is, but so far we haven't found that there is a limit as to how many years these stem cells can be saved after collection.
So the first question I would have asked when we first started this is, why did it take so long for us to realize that these stem cells were so valuable, or that we could garner stem cells in this way, as opposed to all of the controversy surrounding, you know, fetal stem cell research? And I think you made a point earlier. Is it that the technology has changed?
Yeah, our technology just had to catch up. I mean, you know, it's like everything else. We've come leaps and bounds in our ability to do things like cell culture and to grow tissue. In the past, we just didn't have the ability to do it. And over the last 20 years, our ability to do many of these things that were necessary to really begin to develop these kinds of banks just wasn't around. And now we're getting better and better, and that's why ultimately down the line, it's just a question of what's the upper limit. I think that the ability for us to use stem cells for a multitude of disorders and other problems is unlimited. We just don't have the technology yet to know how to use it.
So we're all kind of, everything is in process. But the fact that we have this resource is phenomenal. I mean, because we have hope that we can then, as technology evolves, like you said, someday grow someone an organ.
Absolutely. And I really don't think it's that far-fetched to think that potential exists in the future. And it's going to come sooner than later. And
so
it's exciting.
It's incredibly exciting. So what exactly is happening right now? I mean, not in the future. Let's start with that.
Well, we know that right now there are 80 different diseases that we can treat, a little over 80. And so there's no question that we have an ability to use stem cells to treat and cure many different types of cancers and blood-borne disorders.
So that means, let's just suggest,
sure,
I'm a patient with X disease? Give me an example of what.
Well, let's say you have multiple myeloma and there is a need for a bone marrow. You have this cancer, you're getting treated for it, and we need to rebuild your white blood cell and red blood cell population after treatment. We know that we can potentially use stem cells to begin to do that. And we have been doing it. We've been using it for sickle cell anemia and other disorders that we can basically rebuild certain populations of your red blood cell system and repopulate your body with cells that don't have cancer or don't have whatever genetically inheritable disorder that you have.
That's incredible. So you said, is that in lieu of something like a bone marrow transplant?
Correct. And that's what's really exciting about this is that we're using fetal cells that actually sometimes in some disorders work better than adult cells.
Wow.
It is. It's amazing.
This is actually curing these diseases.
It does. It helps to cure, and in some cases it'll only partially treat, but it exists as a therapy that, 20 years ago we didn't have. And especially when you look at some of these things are inherited metabolic disorders that previously we just didn't have a whole lot we could do with.
Give me some other examples.
Oh, there's a list of these disorders that have horrible names because they kind of go on. There's mucopolysaccharide disorders. There's problems with lipid storage, all different kinds of
disorders.
These are genetically inheritable diseases that in the past were basically killers. There were very few treatments. We would have things that would maybe prolong life for a short period of time, but now we have the ability to really treat these things.
So in effect, what happens, just for a layperson, you basically inject these types of little fetal or blood bank cells and they begin to replicate,
they do,
populate, and then basically take over?
That's correct. And it's a fascinating science, and stem cell transplants, ultimately what we'd like to be able to do, and it isn't too far-fetched, is the idea that we can diagnose a disorder in utero. I can put a needle into the umbilical cord and actually do an in utero fetal stem cell transplant. And we're beginning to look at that.
Oh, my goodness.
And
that's
so
mind-blowing.
It is. It really is. And, you know, we have the ability now to do therapy on babies in utero and our ability to expand on that. And before a baby is even born, to cure a disorder.
Oh, my goodness.
Is really mind-boggling.
Oh, that absolutely is chilling to hear that, frankly. It is incredibly neat. In the little bit of time we have left, what's on the horizon? What do you expect the research will do?
Right now there are a multitude of different clinical trials that are in place. There's several different phases of FDA trials, of which the last one is actual treatment with humans. They're working on the idea of things like type 1 diabetes, graft versus host disorder, looking at bone marrow transplants for cardiac repair, not just bone marrow, but stem cell transplants for cardiac repair and recovery, limb ischemia disorders, all different kinds of things that there are anywhere from phase 1 to phase 3 trials that are currently in place. Some are only in the animal studies, but others are getting into actual human studies.
This is really mind-blowing. I just want to thank you so much for coming in and sharing this. And the fact that we're going to have it right here in Central New York at Upstate is absolutely incredible. Thank you so much. My guest has been Dr. Robert Silverman. He's professor and chair of obstetrics and gynecology at Upstate, and he's the director of the Regional Perinatal Center, which is the high-risk obstetrical unit for all of Upstate New York. And he's talking about umbilical cord blood bank, which is going to be an incredible addition to our country. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYY.